Stu Does America.
Welcome to Stu Does America. Justin Haskins is here to talk about the big crash that you won't see coming. President Trump has a new warning for Iran. We'll look at the latest there, but we're going to start by doing the ICE murder myth. Before we get to that, though, I want to say thank you to you because I whine and whine and whine about certain things, and you know, maybe I shouldn't, but I do. And one of the things I whined about was round numbers. You know, because that's a sane thing to worry about. As an adult, I think that, like, thinking about, hey, you have 99,900 subscribers on YouTube and not 100,000 is really something I should be obsessing about on a day-to-day basis. But thanks to you, we are there. 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. Wow. We are there. I mean, if I only was, like, a hot 22-year-old woman or a person flushing cats down the toilet, I would have been here a long time ago. But I'm neither of those two things, so you're just going to have to deal with this particular group of people to kind of commune with, right? We're gonna have a little YouTube commune here because we are, you know, for the people, communists or something like that. Anyway, I wanted to talk about this whole murder myth thing, and you know, because it's just so prominent right now. One thing that if you get out of the bubble of the conservative media for a little bit, which of course I don't recommend that you do because I'm financially incentivized for you to stay here, never learn any other perspectives. Only listen to us. If you get out of that bubble, one thing you really do take in is the fact that the skepticism that you might feel about the media's coverage of these types of incidents when we're talking about ICE murdering people does not exist in most people's world. They see the video maybe one time, they see everyone posting all these things, and they just assume with 100% certainty that this is murder and all these things were murder and the Gestapo is out in Minnesota and they're killing everybody. I mean, this comes a lot from, you know, annoying celebrities, who can continually do this stuff. Let me give you an example of a story that's not related to Minnesota for a moment. Arizona is the place for this one. Man shot in incident involving Border Patrol in Arizona. Here we go. Got another one. Another story of a Border Patrol just murdering an innocent civilian. For what? For pleasure? Probably just for fun? Maybe, yeah, a little exciting, a little Running Man type of situation, right? Why not entertain ourselves? You look at that and you say, wow, that's really, really bad. Drew Holden pulled some of the headlines on this one. Person in critical condition after Arizona shooting involving Border Patrol. Breaking, a person is in critical condition after shooting involving Border Patrol. One person in critical condition after being shot by involving an incident involving Border Patrol. You see these all the time and you think, okay, that's what the coverage is, right? Now, the fourth headline has a little bit of a hint as to why all of this occurred. Because it did occur. Border Patrol did shoot him. The man who authorities say was involved in a smuggling operation was shot Tuesday in an exchange of gunfire with the U.S. Border Patrol after firing at federal helicopters near the U.S.-Mexico border. Federal agents were attempting to apprehend the 34-year-old Arizona man when he shot at Border Patrol helicopters and at agents. You know, that will tend to lead you to get shot. Shooting at federal agents, yes. Now, I want to make sure something's clear here. This is not the same thing as saying you can't bring a gun to a protest, because you absolutely can do that. This is a situation where they're firing at federal agents, not the same as your Second Amendment rights, which, by the way, I will remind not only the media, but also several people in the Trump administration, that is your right. First Amendment's right to show up at the protest. Second Amendment's right to be armed when you are there. That is not something I'm questioning. Drew did point this out. The entire legacy media rushed out the story this afternoon about an Arizona man shot by Border Patrol, explicitly tying and trying to tie what the agents did to Minnesota. Turns out the man shot was an alleged human trafficker who shot at agents first. Many headlines remain unchanged. This is the way this works. They roll these things out. They make the big deal about them. Idiots, and I mean this, idiots who just don't care about getting the facts correct wind up running with whatever impression they get first. And then, I made this graphic. I should have pulled this up today because I was so annoyed about it. I had to make a specific graphic about it. But Steve Kerr, the coach of the Golden State Warriors, who is always wrong on these things. This is a very consistent thing with Steve Kerr. Seems like a good coach, won a bunch of championships, though did have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant there for a lot of them. But it seems like a pretty good coach, I guess. He makes statements all the time on issues like this because he's very woke and wants you to understand he's on your side if you're super woke, which, of course, a lot of his players are. And there's some utility, I suppose, to that, to his stupidity. But he lives directly in that intersection of ignorance and certainty. That's where he lives. And he was talking about how five-year-olds are being kidnapped off the streets and there's no criminals that are being picked up. It's just regular people. And he's saying this with such certainty and passion and just like disregarding. Can you believe that there are people on the other side of these issues without even bothering to think about it or learn about it at all? This is massively frustrating to us. Because I think we look at these incidents and we say, okay, that one looks kind of bad. That one, not so bad. This one's totally fake. Like, let's understand what these things are. The left doesn't do that. And TikTok doesn't do that for them. And Facebook doesn't do that for them. And really, none of these services do. They wind up in this self-imposed cloud of wrongness. It's frustrating. It's not just ignorance. It's ignorance combined with certainty. That's the most frustrating part about it, and it's working on people. Let me give you an Instagram example. I gave this to you yesterday. Another celebrity. This is from Pedro Pascal. He said, ICE has killed 9 people so far in 2026, and they give the names. They all deserve remembrance. They all deserve justice. Now, we've seen things like this that go around forever, and just as a person who's been doing this for a very long time, as I mentioned, I'm going to be off of radio this week, my last week on radio. I've been there for 28 years. We've been talking about stories just like that. In fact, a friend of ours who we used to do radio with, Vinnie Penn in Connecticut, wrote a book about the years that we were all together in Connecticut. It's very entertaining. One of the things that I had forgotten from way back then was a big controversial story in New Haven, Connecticut about a teenager who ran from police and had some altercation with police and was shot, and it was very controversial in the community. And many people believe that, he was just a perfect angel, and there were other factors associated with that story. And this happens over and over and over again. You can name the people. And when they say your names, you kind of can remember a lot of them because we were lied to about those names. The Trayvon Martins, the Michael Browns, all of these where, hands up, don't shoot. He was just standing there, just got executed for no reason. And when you find out what actually happened, you realize that's not the story at all. Some of it might be true. Some of it might be really offensive. But at the end of the day, you have to know what. You have to build your opinions on facts, and that's just not what people do. So when I saw that list, I immediately thought, I said this on the air yesterday, I bet you all those people were not actually murdered by ICE. Even from the Alex Preddy standard, right, where we can talk about what happened there, and even the Renee Good standard, right, where you can say, oh, gosh, well, I don't know, should that have happened? The Alex Preddy thing, I don't know, it seemed like maybe they overreacted. Whatever you want to say, even if you call those murders, I bet those names don't even live up to that standard. So let's go through all the names. This is going to be very interesting and maybe a little misleading. Now, before I do it, I want to tell you, there's no way Pedro Pascal did what we're about to do. Pedro Pascal has no idea if those 9 people were killed in prison. He's not looked at it at all. When he posted that, he just posted it and it was over. By the way, his misleading and massive lie and horribly controversial comments that are left favorable have not gotten him fired from the series he was on or the movie that's coming out on May 22nd. Now, again, he wants you to know, general strike, no work, no commerce at all on January 30th, not May 22nd, because that's when his movie's coming out. So make sure you have that distinction down. Now, let me go through a couple of them quickly, because we already know the stories. We've spent a lot of time on them. Alex Preddy, of course, we saw the videos. We've talked in depth about that. The reason, just to pause on him for a second, there was one development over the past 24 hours you might want to know about. 2 federal agents fired their weapons during Preddy's shooting. Government report to Congress said that report did say 2 different officers fired. One thing it did not say was supporting a bunch of the statements made by administration officials immediately after that. He was there for a massacre, that he pulled his weapon out trying to kill officers. Even the report from the DHS does not support those things that they said earlier, kind of agreeing with what we initially talked about here on this program. The other one is, of course, Renee Good. She was the woman who had the car, which we again showed you, the wheels spinning while pointing at the officer. She slips on the ice before she turns. I can definitely understand how the officer thought he was trying to run her over in that situation. But again, that has been sort of litigated in the public eye. We still need to have a full understanding as to what went on there. But I leave those two aside because those are the two main headline ones we've already covered. Let's go through the rest of the names on the list, shall we? Geraldo Lunas Campos. Cuban immigrant's death at ICE facility ruled a homicide, according to an autopsy. In a statement, DHS spokesperson said Campos was pronounced dead after experiencing medical distress. Lunas became disruptive while in line for medication and refused to return to his assigned dorm, the statement said. He was subsequently placed in segregation. While in segregation, staff observed him in distress and contacted on-site medical personnel for assistance. In the autopsy report, Adam Gonzalez, the deputy medical examiner for El Paso County, determined that Campos died from asphyxia due to neck and torso compression. This is arguably another strong case. We don't know all of the details, but they are ruling it a homicide. Something happened to him here. We don't know the entire thing, but this, in theory, could fit the post. I will give you one addendum to that, however, because in theory, you could say, okay, this guy was murdered by ICE. Maybe that's true. And despite what I'm about to tell you, if that is true, the people responsible for that should be charged with crimes. That is how these things should happen. We may see that in these other cases as well. So just because what I'm about to tell you is true, that doesn't mean if he was murdered by someone, they shouldn't be charged. I will say your sympathy factor for him may be slightly diminished when I tell you he had prior convictions, including sexual contact with a minor. So we're talking about someone who was charged with child molestation, basically. Maybe not the most sympathetic figure to put up in your Instagram post. They don't put that in the Instagram post, though. They just put the name. So perhaps he was murdered. We don't know that yet. But if he was, he was a murdered child molester, allegedly. So we'll get that. Next up, next name on the list comes from this story. Active shooter or ICE agent's victim? What happened in LA New Year's Eve killing? I will note, sort of comically, that this happened on New Year's Eve, which wouldn't put it in the year. I know that's a technical distinction, but when you're trying to make this point and you only have to come up with nine names, you'd think you'd get them all in the year. Now, maybe this happened directly after the new year. Ring the bell. There's a reason to believe that that's possible. But what happened here? This is a fascinating one because it is true this person was killed, not necessarily murdered, killed by an ICE agent. What happened? Well, you know what happened, of course. ICE agent with a mask, out of a van, out of an SUV, rolls up on an innocent person at a Home Depot and executes him for no reason, right? That's what you're supposed to believe. You're supposed to believe that this happened during some angry ICE effort to take out illegal immigrants and throw them in prison, and something went awry, and now the person's dead, right? Well, what if I were to tell you that, yes, an ICE agent did shoot the person, but that ICE agent was off duty, not working for ICE at the time? What was he? Where was he working? What was he doing? Well, he wasn't working at all. He was in his home and heard multiple gunshots and believed there was an active shooter outside. So he went out to try to help the situation and saw a man with a rifle and wound up shooting him. Early news reports after the incident said that Porter was firing an assault-style rifle. Their fabulous term, of course, for that. Law enforcement officials, speaking on condition of anonymity in order to discuss an active case, confirmed the detail to the Times this week. And you might say, well, how do we know? We don't know that he was firing that gun. Sure, he was carrying that gun, but who knows if he was firing it? Well, even his defenders admit that he was firing the gun. What they say, their defense, quote unquote, to this incident is this. Porter's loved ones and advocates say they believe he was ringing in the new year by firing a gun into the air. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting inside my home and I hear a bunch of gunshots going on, they believe other people were also firing guns in the air, I'm very concerned there's an active shooter. And if I see some guy walking around the neighborhood with a quote-unquote assault weapon and I'm hearing gunshots, very possible that you are going to get shot. Of course, shooting your gun into the air to celebrate New Year's is a very dangerous act and also a crime. You're not allowed to do that at all. The defense for Porter is they were upset he got shot and not the other people who were also firing guns into the air. That's their defense. Was this an ICE-related murder? Absolutely not. It has nothing to do with ICE other than the fact that that's where this guy worked. That's it. He was at home, has nothing to do with an ongoing ICE operation at all. All right, next up, we have a gentleman named Parody Law. Yes, Parody Law. It's a great name, I will say that. Parody Law, wonderful individual. Now, we're not going to go to that part yet, guys. We're going to go to this criminal illegal alien from Cambodia. Wonderful gentleman. I'm sure he's completely wonderful. Let me tell you his rap sheet briefly. He, in 1997, he was receiving stolen property. 2000, convicted of robbery, criminal conspiracy, and theft. 2002, convicted of driving under the influence. 2008, convicted of forgery. 2010, convicted of intentional possession of a controlled substance. 2011, violating probation. 2014, receiving stolen property again. 2021, intentional possession of a controlled substance again. And October 25th, 2022, convicted of forgery again. This guy's got a multi-decade criminal record outside of the fact that he was here illegally. This is why he was arrested and brought into ICE custody. Now, you might say, well, that doesn't mean he should be murdered in ICE custody, and I would tend to agree with you on that one. But is that exactly what happened? Well, Parody Law was arrested by ICE agents outside his Upper Darby home on Tuesday, then transferred to the detention center where he received treatment for severe withdrawal from opioids. The next day, he was found unresponsive in his cell. Center staff immediately administered CPR and several doses of naloxone. That's what you use to hopefully try to reverse a withdrawal situation from opioids. Emergency medical services workers arrived and took over resuscitation efforts. I was going to say resurrection efforts. I don't think it's Jesus. Anyway, he was transported. It's Parody Law, not Jesus. He was transported to Thomas Jefferson University, admitted in critical condition on Wednesday evening. Medical evaluations indicated he had limited brain function. His condition worsened on Thursday, and medical staff reported complete renal failure and no brain activity. So he was pronounced dead by hospital staff. So again, he's taken into custody after a zillion crimes and staying here illegally for multiple decades. Then he's brought in, he's given treatment for a withdrawal from the drug he's addicted to. That apparently does not go all that well. He's found unresponsive. They try again to treat him. They bring him to the hospital. He dies in the hospital. Is that him being murdered by ICE? Is it? No evidence, certainly, that there is. It was a medical situation. There are some people who are claiming, well, they should have done a better job with the medical treatment. And that's possible. Though, again, even if that's true, that's not ICE murdering people. That's something completely different anyway, and that's not necessarily proven by any means. Let's go to Luis Beltran Yadez Cruz. Now, he is an illegal immigrant as well from Honduras. Just an illegal immigrant, just hanging out in the United States, and he's just being targeted for working at Home Depot. No, he entered the United States without inspection, admission, or parole. He was subsequently removed from the United States. He then re-entered the country without authorization. He then submitted multiple applications for temporary protected status, all of which were denied, but he stayed anyway. So he's a multiple-time offender on the illegal immigration front. He's also a 68-year-old guy. Now, he's not necessarily one of the most violent criminals we have on this list by any means. But he is a Honduran national. He died in custody after he was admitted to a hospital for heart-related health issues, according to ICE. The man was detained at the Imperial Regional Detention Facility in Calexico when the staff observed his need for medical attention. So he gets arrested. He's brought in. They notice he's having some problems. They bring him to the hospital. He goes there. He has chest pain. He's taken by a helicopter. They're trying to rescue him for some reason, even though they're the Gestapo. I don't understand that. He's taken to the hospital, to JFK Memorial Hospital, for further care, and he was pronounced dead at 1:18 a.m. So they arrested him. He had a heart attack in prison. They tried to rescue him. He died. That's sad. That is not ICE murdering people in prison. Next up, Luis Gustavo Nunez Caceres. Now, he was an illegal immigrant as well from Honduras. He was arrested November 17th, 2025, in an operation in Houston. Now, again, kind of a similar case here. Nunez Caceres was 42. He was pronounced dead January 5th in Houston after being treated for chronic heart-related health issues. Was he murdered by ICE? Did they clog his arteries? That's quite the operation, and if they're capable of that, we really should get them on the phone and find out what's going on there, because that's a little scary. I don't think they forced him to eat all the cholesterol. He had a heart attack in prison. That's not ICE murdering him. That's not the same thing. Pedro Pascal. Then we have Eber Sanchez Dominguez. Ah, you see the headline. DHS confirms Mexican citizen's death in ICE custody. Another person murdered by ICE. He was in, he was an illegal immigrant, of course. But he also was driving without a license. Is that enough to murder a man in prison? I don't know. You'd have to ask him because he killed himself. Sanchez was in ICE custody for 6 days and was awaiting a hearing when he was discovered hanging by the neck and unresponsive in his sleeping quarters. Is that someone who murdered by ICE? He hung himself in his sleeping quarters. Now, that's an extreme example, of course, of a lie on the list, but, right? Well, let me give you Victor Manuel Diaz. Yes, Victor Manuel Diaz. He was taken into custody, released on parole for pending a court date. Didn't show up, of course, to that court date. We hear that story once again. But why did they have to murder him for that? Why would they murder this totally innocent person who just didn't show up to a court date? That's a death sentence from ICE? Well, I don't know. Did he deserve death? The only way we could find that out is if you asked him, because he killed himself. Victor Manuel Diaz appears to have killed himself Wednesday at the sprawling tent complex in the U.S. Army's Fort Bill base in El Paso. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said in a statement, the federal investigation into his death continues. Now, it's possible we might find out later on that he didn't kill himself and that ICE agents came in, grappled in, murdered him, hung him from his cell. Those things might be possible and we might know them in investigation, but it's obviously misleading and obviously wrong when all the evidence we have to this point indicates that some of these people killed themselves. Some of them had heart attacks. This is insanity. Yet I promise you, no one who liked the post did what we just did. No one who retweeted or reposted or regrammed that particular post from Pedro Pascal decided to go through the effort to actually look up what the hell happened in any of these stories. This is a massive weakness in our civilization. It's that dire. Nobody does this stuff. You have now. You're there. You've done the research. You at least know something about these names. But the people throwing them around and promoting them and making Nazi enemies, putting targets on the back of our federal officers, none of those people bothered to do it. That's a real problem. Now, just to enlighten the situation, we have another massive problem facing our society. Justin Haskins is going to join me to talk about it next. I'm joined now by Justin Haskins, Vice President of the Heartland Institute, Senior Fellow for Our Republic, and author of the new book, The Next Big Crash, Conspiracy, Collapse, and the Men Behind History's Biggest Heist, which is available wherever you get your books. Justin, congratulations on the book coming out. Thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be with you. This is the first time I think I've ever been on the show selling a book that didn't have that other guy's name on it. Yeah. Who's always dragging me down.
Yep.
So this is exciting for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most of these books that you put Glenn's name on would have sold 10 times the amount if it wasn't for him. So
that's what I keep telling him.
Yeah, it's good. I keep telling him as well. So just so you know, we're in alignment on that one. You actually were on the show. I don't know how long ago it was, maybe in November or December, talking about the idea that this book was coming. And you sort of previewed it. For people who didn't hear that episode, though, I feel like you have to take them back to the very beginning, because when you were pitching this to me, I was like, wait, what is this? I don't even understand what you're talking about. It's a big concept that people probably haven't never heard anything about. So it's an important book. Why did you write it?
Yeah. So several years ago, I was approached by some researchers who told me that they had discovered that, contrary to popular belief, nearly everyone in the United States of America has lost their ownership over their investment property, so specifically securities. So when you think of like Wall Street investments, like stocks and bonds, retirement funds, ETFs, that laws had been very quietly changed over several decades to take your direct ownership rights away from you when it comes to your investments. Even though you bond paid for them, you don't actually own them any longer. And when these people told me this, I thought it was the craziest thing I had ever heard. It couldn't possibly be true. But I had so many people, even people in legislature, starting to hear about this that I started looking into it. And the more I looked into it, the crazier the story got. And I couldn't stop. I kept investigating. And 3 years later, the culmination of 3 years of work, is this book where I researched everything that I had heard before, plus a million new things that came up as part of that investigation. And what I learned was that there was a massive conspiracy that occurred over several decades involving one of the richest families in American history, government agencies, a guy who used to be an officer in the CIA, and a whole bunch of other nefarious characters, many of them on Wall Street, to take away your property rights when it comes to investments, also that Wall Street firms could make more money. And they use that power to ensure that when the next big crash occurs, those institutions will be protected and everyone else will be at risk as a result of it. It's an incredible story.
I think people's first reactions to hearing that is, well, wait a minute. I can go in my Fidelity account or my Charles Schwab account right now. I can pull it up and I can see my investments right there. The numbers are right there. What do you mean I don't own them?
Yeah, that's a great point. And that was the first thing that I said as well. The reality is that every single person, when you buy an investment through a retirement account or a brokerage account, what you're actually buying is something called the securities entitlement agreement. It's basically a contractual agreement, but you're not buying the underlying asset itself. You're not buying the actual investment. So when you go to your Fidelity account and you have Nvidia stock or something like that, you've invested in a gold ETF or whatever it is that you've invested in, you think you own a share of Nvidia, you think you own a share of Microsoft or whatever, but you actually don't own it. What you own is a contractual agreement that gives you certain benefits and protections related to that investment. But all of these securities investments are actually owned by one singular institution on Wall Street called DTC. They're the direct registered owner of all of these investments. It's not actually you. More than $80 trillion and over a million different kinds of securities are held by DTC, which is the depository trust company. And DTC was set up back in the 1970s by these big Wall Street firms who are trying to figure out a way, I think, frankly, to make more money and increase their power. And that's all laid out in the book, this incredible conspiracy is what I call it, to take away your property rights. But the idea that you actually own these things, everybody thinks that because they can see in their brokerage accounts that they have, you know, some kind of entitlement to their investments. And that's still true. But because you're not the direct registered owner of these investments, that's the illusion. You're not really the owner. Because of that, you don't have the same property rights. And big institutions have taken advantage of that, working with state and federal lawmakers to rig the game so that when the next big crash occurs, they'll be protected and you may not be protected, depending on what happens.
I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, so let me ask this, because obviously their pitch when they came up with this idea and started implementing it was not, hey, we should get really rich. Like, you know, there had to be some argument that they thought this would make things better in some way. Is it easier to move stock around? Is there some argument that they have that this is actually better for the investor?
Yeah, so back in the 1960s and 70s, there was a crisis on Wall Street called, they call it the paperwork crisis. And the problem was, as volume on Wall Street was dramatically increasing, everything was done by paper. So when you bought stock back in those days, you would actually have a physical stock certificate printed with your name on it. Some people are watching the show probably remember that. That doesn't happen anymore. And the reason for that is because you don't actually own the stock certificates. But what they did, what they figured out was, you know, we could solve this paperwork crisis by just putting all of the stocks and bonds and all the other securities into one institution, make that one institution the owner. And then when transactions occur, we just move names around on paper. And, oh, by the way, we get all these other added benefits. Like now we get to do stock lending and we get to do derivatives trading, which is basically just gambling on Wall Street and all sorts of other things. And we don't have to ask people's permission to do any of this stuff because they don't actually own the underlying investments. We own the underlying investments. So all these firms created the DTC. DTC, by the way, is a subsidiary of another company called DTCC, which is owned by big Wall Street firms.
So this is, that's the top of the chain here. These big Wall Street firms actually own, in collaboration, they own the DTC and the DTCC?
Yeah, they own DTCC as shareholders, the participants who use DTCC, its clearinghouse and other services, are part owners relative to how much they use the service. They're part owners of these of DTCC shareholders, but it's not open to the public. It's not like you could go buy stock in DTCC. The only people who can buy it are the institutions that actually use it. So in effect, they indirectly own all of the securities investments themselves, but they don't directly own it. It's directly owned by that one singular institution.
What a wild story. So, I mean, I guess like, you know, because there's a lot of things that worry us. Like we say, hey, I agreed to this long list of, you know, a technical jargon, legal jargon that I didn't understand when I clicked I agree on my phone. And everyone kind of knows that's a bad idea. But it feels like, well, what does it actually matter? What's the big difference here? When you look at this, I mean, I've made investments. I apparently don't own them, but I've been able to sell them when I want to. Does this actually make a difference in people's lives?
Yeah. So on a day-to-day basis, for the most part, people have benefited from this system because it's been a lot easier and cheaper and faster to transact on Wall Street because they centralized all of the ownership and control. The problem with the system isn't when things are going well. The problem with the system is if things go crazy, if we have a big financial collapse like what we saw in 2008, you could have situations because of the ways that they've written regulations and rules where people could actually lose their investments if Wall Street firms were using those investments properly or improperly as collateral in loans. So in other words, you're doing business with Fidelity, and I'm not saying Fidelity is doing this, but let's just say, for example, Fidelity then goes out and gets a loan with using your investments as collateral to get the loan. Because it's, remember, it's not your property. Now, they're not supposed to do that, but institutions have done this before. And then they go to a bank, they get the loan, and then they can't pay the loan back because there's a big crash. The bank can actually take your investments, even if they weren't supposed to pledge those investments as collateral in the first place. That's already written into law. And then there's all sorts of other emergency powers laws that have put into place that would allow them to change the rules whenever they want to use your investments in all kinds of ways that you never even dreamed of. And again, all of it stems from the reality that the these investments are not really yours in it, at least not in a direct registered ownership sense. Mm. You have some contractual rights to them, but those rights can be changed because you don't own these things the way you own your car or your house or your clothes or the things in your pocket.
And this seems consistent, too, with the push toward what you've written about with Glenn and other books, the abandonment of the ownership culture, right?
That's exactly right. We've joked before, you know, in the future, you'll own nothing, right? That's the World Economic Forum. One of the writers for World Economic Forum wrote that famously. It's part of the whole Great Reset thing. The truth is you already pretty much own nothing when it comes to the vast majority of wealth. I mean, the money that you have in the bank already doesn't really belong to you, technically. Technically, it's owned by the bank. And now, when it comes to your securities investments, it turns out that the vast majority of securities investments out there in the world, investments that we've all poured our money into for retirement, that doesn't really belong to us either, at least not in the truest sense of the word. And so when the next big crash happens, and it may not be this year, it may not be next year, it may not be 10 years from now, but whenever it happens, there is the option. These institutions have created all these safeguards for themselves. As one person who helped write some of these laws said, they're planning for Armageddon. Okay, so when Armageddon comes, they'll be protected at the expense of everyone else. And they think this is completely justified because they're too big to fail and everyone else isn't. But most people just have no idea what's going on. And if they did, frankly, I think they would behave in a completely different way and never be able to look at the economy the same way again.
It's just absolutely bizarre. And is there a way to turn this around, Justin? I mean, like, is it just changing regulations and laws, making the shareholder at a higher priority level? Do we have to unwind this entire DTC saga? What should we do here?
Yeah, I mean, there are solutions. I lay them out in the book. There are some legislative solutions that probably should go into effect. Lawmakers across the country, there's actually been some movement at the state level over the past few years that we've been working on, advocating for lawmakers to make some changes. And they've been fought by bank lobbyists and by Wall Street lobbyists every step of the way to stop this from happening. And so there have been efforts to try to prioritize things differently so that individuals wouldn't lose their property if Wall Street is gambling with their property when they shouldn't be doing it. And there's been some other legal changes that have been suggested as well. But as far as unwinding the whole system, it's a complete impossibility at this point as it's currently constructed. There have been some suggestions I've heard that maybe we could put all of this on blockchain and make people direct owners through blockchain technology, which I think is a really interesting idea that we're still looking into. But the idea that we could just blow up this whole system overnight, just change some laws, the entire Wall Street system, all derivatives trading, options, and everything that's going on Wall Street today depends on this, stock lending. Without this model, Wall Street would literally collapse. So they can't just change laws and change it overnight. Mm. It's going to be something that has to take some time.
Wow. It is a fascinating story. I don't think most people have any idea this is going on. Justin, I know, has worked hard over the past few years to put all this together, and you should check this book out. He's, of course, the vice president of the Heartland Institute, senior fellow for Our Republic, and the author of this new book. It's called The Next Big Crash, Conspiracy, Collapse, and the Men Behind History's Biggest Heist, an amazing story. It's available wherever you get your books. Justin, appreciate all your work on this, and thanks for keeping us up to date.
Thanks, Stu.
And now we go from Iran to Elon. Trump is threatening Iran with far worse attack in June if it doesn't negotiate a nuclear deal. Oh, I can't wait for another nuclear deal with Iran. That always works out well. Trump says a massive armada is headed toward Iran. We are threatening them. I was thinking today, I'm a little disconcerted that we didn't wind up having more happen in Iran after these protests. It seems like they've kind of died down now. We were just getting words of how much damage was actually done. Thousands of people were killed in this situation over the past month or so. But it seemed at one point like maybe we're going to see this regime overthrown. Now, I don't know. I mean, maybe we will. But, Trump is trying to keep pressure on them. I don't know that a nuclear deal, though, from them means anything. Right? Like the same thing. I would complain the same thing about what's going on in Venezuela. I don't understand it. I heard Marco Rubio out there today saying, like, oh, this, you know, Delcy is going to be great. She's, you know, hey, don't worry. She's incentivized to make sure oil companies can come in. And maybe that's true right now. Yeah, they saw, you know, come Maduro go away, and maybe they're going to be scared and they'll play the right game for right now. But what happens when the next time a Democrat's elected? They're not going to be worried about that anymore, and they're going to start doing the same crap again. This is a true believer in socialism. Leaving her in control of that country, at least we're not even rooting for the opposite at this point. I don't understand that at all. That's just me. 3 months after rapidly scheduled arguments, the Supreme Court has yet to decide on Trump's tariffs. I don't know if that's true or if they just haven't released the decision yet. A lot of times they do that at the end of a run here at the Supreme Court. But that is a big thing. It's kind of hanging over our heads right now, hanging over the economy's head. Will tariffs continue? We don't know. Prediction markets think it's about a 70% chance they will get overturned. As I've told you before, the legal case for these tariffs done the way that they are done, in my mind, is very, very weak. So my guess is they do get overturned. This is a guess. My guess is they do get overturned, at least mostly. However, the president will have rights to go do them the other way. The only reason he did them this way is because he didn't want to go through all the hassles and hurdles he had to go through. And he wanted to make them very broad and sort of arbitrary when he wanted to change them. The way the old system would be set up is he'd have to go through a bunch of hurdles, and he'd have to do that every time he wanted to change the rates, which is not what he wants. He wants to use them kind of as a negotiating tool, which might be a great policy. It's not my thing, but you might love that, but it needs to be in law for him to be able to do that. The power for that negotiation is in the hands of Congress. They have to explicitly allow the president to do that. I argue that that's not even right, but at the very least, they have to explicitly allow it, and that's a whole other situation. Now, Trump also says the value of the dollar is great, though the dollar has hit a four-year low, and you see gold going through the roof. I was talking to Glenn after the show today. I'm like, $5,300 gold? I think we might need to do a segment on that tomorrow. What is going on? I mean, the line for gold, if you're looking at a chart, is straight up. It is really, really incredible, and there's a lot to go on there. And also, we have the Ilhan Omar incident. Let's show you the video here real quick if you haven't seen it. She is speaking.
NPHS Secretary Kristi Noem crazy person must resign or
stands
face
up
impeachment.
With a syringe, not a needle, with a syringe, and sprays like liquid at her like sweater. She kind of gets pissed, runs over at him. We don't get a good view from that particular angle of the man who did this. I don't know what this is. A lot of people are saying, hey, this was set up to bring drama. Some people are saying this is this horrible attack. I don't know if it's either of those. It does appear to be vinegar. So no, she was in no danger, though at the time, to be fair, she didn't know that unless she was involved in it. And there's also just a chance here. You look at the guy after the incident, he looks completely insane and likely on many different substances. We might wind up just finding out this is a crazy person, but it's probably one of those three possibilities. We'll keep you updated. Well, if you haven't heard the news, it is the last week of my career on the Glenn Beck radio program, a bizarre thing to say out loud. It's been an incredible run. We've had a lot of great times this week, just kind of thinking back to all the insanity that we've been a part of over 28 years of broadcasting together. So please join us for the last couple of shows on radio. We will be making a lot of really cool things that I think you'll like, especially if you're a long-term fan, but also we will be making an announcement on the future of what I'm going to be doing next. And also, it's got something to do with this show as well. I think you'll want to hear that. And if you don't happen to be able to tune in for radio, just go to the YouTube page, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Subscribe. We're over 100,000 subscribers now. Yes, yes, for us. We're basically on the heels of like Mr. Beast, Dude Perfect at this point. Go there. We'll make sure we post the updates there to let you know exactly what's going on and how you can check us out in the future. Thanks so much, and we'll see you tomorrow.